I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by, from Krypton Site and KSAC TV, Mr. Craig Byrne. What's up, Craig?
Hey, good to be on again. It's a historic day today.
It is a historic day in Smallville history. I just want to be one of the first to congratulate Lex Luthor for winning president of the United States. What do you think about Lex being elected today, Craig?
What I find really interesting is they called the race in the middle of the day, because when Clark went to that roof, it was daylight out. And he already has like an economic plan. I mean, Lex is really ahead of everything.
That's true. That's true. So obviously we're joking about the Smallville series finale, which I spoil in almost every episode here, but this is a retrospective podcast, so hashtag deal with it, I guess, guys. But yeah, so the Smallville series finale flashes forward 7 years from the quote-unquote present day of 2011, and we see Lois and Clark at the Daily Planet, and we see Lex Luthor on a computer screen that he was elected president on presumably Election Day, presumably 2018, because the super at the bottom says, Luthor elected president 2018, and it's been a joke for several years.
And this is the same world where you have a Smallville comic book that pretty much tells the story of Clark being Superman. That didn't make sense either.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a few years. But how did you take the fact that Lex was elected president in 2018? Because for a long time it was a joke. Like, do they do math? Do they not understand when elections are? Do they not look ahead enough? Because my thing is. Chloe's and Oliver's son, spoilers, was like 7, but he could have been 5, right? And it wouldn't have changed anything. So I think that's the only reason they chose to jump ahead 7 years instead of 5. And that would have been 2016, and that would have been perfect.
I just feel like they were trying to do, like, you know, not represent the real world. Like, maybe the elections are those years. I mean, like, they had their senator race in season 5. Did Kansas really have a senator race that year?
I don't know.
You know, maybe politics are totally different there in the Smallville universe. But the other thing is, maybe they didn't want to wait until like 2020. Or, I mean, 2016 would have made more sense. But, you know, because that's when people, you know, nominate people who have daddy issues into becoming president. And nobody has more daddy issues than Lex Luthor. But as we will see in this episode, Covenant. But actually, Clark has daddy issues too with Jor-El. But, you know, we'll get to that. but yeah, I just feel like they were just trying to keep their own little world, and maybe 2020 was too far away.
The way I justify it and the way I've talked about it with people over the years, other than just making fun of the fact that they didn't count the election cycle, is, you know, Lex Luthor probably engineered some scenario where he would become president, like, you know, in an unorthodox way. You know, because there's no way they would elect some billionaire with no political experience, you know, to be president officially, right, guys? So that's the only way I think it would happen. So, but we're talking around the issue as we do, but it is life imitating art, imitating life. Because Lex Luthor, when he was reinvented in the 80s by John Byrne,
no relation,
right? he kind of based a lot of his character off of Donald Trump. And then Lex Luthor in the comic books became president in 2000. And then Donald Trump became president in 2016, which is only 2 years off Smallville's prediction. So there you go. We're all a big snake eating itself, I guess. Right, Greg?
It just kind of hit me. So Byrne was the first writer to handle Superman after Crisis. The last writer to handle Superman before Crisis was named Moore.
Oh, there it is.
There we go. It's all connected. Hashtag.
I don't know what it means, but it means we're legit, guys. So there you go. Yeah. So happy. I look forward to 4 years of financial prosperity and building the wall and making Krypton pay for it. That's why I voted for Lex. So.
Now you're making me think of Supergirl. I'm surprised they haven't started that storyline.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about President Lex Luthor today. We're here to talk about the season 3 finale of Smallville, Covenant. Now, Craig, this Smallville season 2, season 3, this is like the height of Smallville's, I think, like pop cultural popularity and relevance. You know, like I call them quote unquote normal people were still watching the show at this point. You know, people at school were like talking about it, you know, even like, you know, it would be, you'd see it on the cover of like TV Guide and, you know, entertainment magazines. So people still knew, people, Smallville was still on and people weren't surprised Smallville was still on at this point, you know. So what are your kind of memories of this time of the show when season 3 was wrapping up?
Well, I have a lot of memories about this time, but rewatching the episode, which I did earlier today, just reminded me of how good the episode was. Like, I mean, everybody was firing on like all cylinders, especially like Beeman's directing. I thought the acting was good in the episode. The Clark and Lex of it all, you know, like their rift, you know, Chloe, Lana, everybody had good storylines. And the Jonathan, Lionel, it just was really damn good. But also, I think this might be like the peak, like peak Smallville, if you think about it. Like, you know, even though season 3 was kind of like, oh, the season was a bit dark, you know, like in the reviews at the time, I feel like it all built to this season 3 finale where you thought, oh, is this where Clark and Lex are going to be enemies? Or, you know, oh, look at Lex kind of moving in on Lana. What's going on here?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because that's something I've noticed, especially in these last few episodes of season 3. It's like they're planting the seeds for the Lexana to come. You know, you don't realize it. You were the frog in the pot, and they were turning up the heat before you realize it, right? Because once you see where they go with it, you realize what they were doing. And I've never been a fan of that. I never will be. Couldn't Clark and Lex have a rift not have to do with like a woman? I mean, like, really, is they gonna make it that? You know, they both like the same girl, right? And that's the main thing.
But they also, you have to also realize they pulled the card where Clark saw Lex's Chamber of Clark Kent, as we called it back in the day.
Yes, the chamber. I love that. Yeah, I thought I've had that in my notes. The Chamber of Clark Kent, as we called it on Krypton site.
And apparently he left all of the light computers on for Clark to just walk in and see, including multiple copies of the same pictures, which was a little creepy.
That's the and we'll get into it when he gets into that scene, but I think Lex could have spun it if he just didn't have the same giant pictures of Clark and his whole family. I might add.
Yeah, it was like a shrine to Clark. But again, that, you know, watching it at the time, you're thinking, how much does Lex know? And, you know, just the whole notion that, you know, he's following things. And I mean, I even liked that this episode, I mean, they had some unlikely pairings that we didn't usually see. Like, we had Jonathan talking to Chloe, and I don't think there's another episode where Jonathan and Chloe really talk that much.
No, I think maybe in group settings, you know, but yeah, even the show knows that, because Jonathan comes in, he's like, so this is the legendary torch. So yeah, even they know he's never been there before. So but this is really, this is the end of the first, you know, volume of Smallville, if you will.
Yes.
You know, because the show can divvy it up into different volumes, and seasons 1 through 3 really do fit together as its own. They have its own identity.
And then there's 4 and 5, and then 6 is its own weird thing, and then 7 through 10.
So that's how you would split it up like that?
No, actually, 6 and 7 I put together, and then 8 through 10. Yeah, that's...
Well, see, I would say, I wouldn't even put 4 and 5 together. I would put 4 on, like, this weird island unto itself, because it's, like, this weird bridge between the high school years and everything after. Because you got characters like the Teagues in there, you know, and all that stuff.
Fair.
But 5 fits with 6 and 7 more.
Fair enough.
And then, you know, 8 through 10 are obviously its own volume. So 4 is this weird transitional chapter, which I know people have been loving to waiting for to hear me talk about 4 for forever now, because it's my least favorite season. We'll see if I reevaluate that. But I think coming off of season 3, that's why I didn't like 4, because 4 is so different than 3.
Yes.
You know? It's such a departure. It's like The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. It subverted my expectations. And that's not necessarily a good thing. But anyway.
But Carrie Fisher doesn't show up till season 5.
There it is. pour one out for Carrie, guys. So yeah, season 3. I will say this about this episode. It wraps up a lot of great plot threads that the season had been building towards, obviously, right? But conceptually, the idea to bring in Supergirl seemed very random to me.
Well, here's the thing that, like, again, another thing I was thinking when I was watching it is TV shows now, they would have started to bring Kara in like 8 episodes before the end of the season. That would have been like a big mystery. You know, who's that girl? And then she shows up. I kind of liked that they just threw her in. And, you know, nowadays also if that happened on a show, they're like, oh, they're preparing a spinoff for her. Immediately. Kind of like when Laura Vandervoort came on, but still. Right. you know, it just was like, you have to also realize at the time, you know, we didn't have the guest heroes on Smallville. You didn't have the Flash or Aquaman showing up. And so, like, the notion that they were pulling something from the Superman mythos and putting it into the show, so we thought, that's really kind of amazing. And, you know, they got an actress who, you know, was beautiful, very tall. I noticed they framed her certain ways, which might be deemed sexist now. But that it was the WB. They would frame Clark the same way. You
yeah,
know?
Of course, yeah.
If he had his shirt off.
Adrienne Palicki, right?
Yeah.
She has gone, this was her first, you know, taste of the superhero world.
And she has been in more failed superhero TV pilots than anyone else in the world. She was in Aquaman.
Right. As
she
a
was
siren.
Wonder Woman.
As Wonder Woman, right.
And then she did that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spinoff pilot that never even aired anywhere.
Yeah, no, she, you know, I fell off Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. halfway through the first season, but they actually appeared on the show, right? Like as characters.
She was a series regular, and she was really good on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, it's not her fault that she keeps getting into these projects.
Well,
I'll
say this for her. Beyond this episode, obviously, I know her best from Friday Night Lights. She played Tyra.
She did well for herself.
Great show, yeah. So she has been a consistently working actress, so good on her. But here's the deal, Craig. You mentioned some great acting this episode. I didn't think she did that well in this episode. I mean,
I'm talking about the series regulars, like you know, like everybody. I thought like Tom, Kristen, Michael, Allison, Schneider, Annette, Glover, especially.
Oh yeah, Glover.
All brought their A game. I thought it was a really well done episode. Yeah, Adrienne Palicki wasn't that great, but she wasn't hired to be that great. She was hired to be the hot alien who. You know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is.
Fair enough.
It was one of her first roles. Soon after that, she did a Lost in Space reboot pilot for the WB.
Oh my god! Yeah, she was in that.
Yeah.
That's again another failed pilot. Oh my god!
But then the next year, she did a little pilot called Supernatural, where she was Sam Winchester's girlfriend.
Really?
Well,
she was in that
very first episode of Supernatural. Well, that show kind of did okay. I mean, if it were still in the air, they'd be in like season 14 by now, and I'd be covering the 300th episode next week or something. But, you know, I don't know.
One last thing I want to mention about the show before we jump into the episode discussion proper. Pete's last episode was last week, right? They mentioned him a couple times in this episode, which is nice. And, you know, I will say, even though it did feel like kind of a shoehorned in subplot of Forsaken that Pete was leaving. The scenes that he did have and the plot that he did have was really solid and some of the best stuff that he's had on the show. But what light can you shed on Sam Jones III leaving Smallville?
I think the thing is that, you know, Clark had a best friend in the show at this point in Chloe, in a way. So there really was no need to keep Pete around, maybe. But also, you know, this kind of fed into the whole FBI of it all, which they mention in this finale where it's like, yeah, the FBI people are already harassing Pete, made him leave town. You know, it's that sort of thing. So it kind of just all came together. And I think, I mean, although there were times when it would have been nice for Clark to have a best guy friend who's not Lex, I think the character kind of ran his course. And, you know, having different characters like Lois later is an upgrade. So I think that might be what was happening.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and he just signified more of the high school life that they were trying to move away from.
Interesting because I feel like when the actors, like, I just came across an interview I did with some of the actors around season 7, and they were talking about Hero, where Pete came back, and it's like, oh, it's so cool. It reminds us of high school when we're all together and doing these scenes together. And that's kind of cool, you know? But so you kind of did have to have that delineation. I wish Pete had been more Clark's best friend, but that ship sailed pretty early.
All right, well, it's time, Craig. It's time to end season 3. It's time to enter this covenant.
Oh gosh, I like that the term covenant was used in the episode.
Yes, the episode title said episode plus one.
Before you jump to conclusions, Clark.
You told me you stopped investigating me.
I did.
You did. Then what is this?
I understand how you could think all this is about you, but in fact, it's about me.
More lies.
So much of my own life I can't explain. Survived countless brushes with death, and it all started with this car crash. If I'm guilty of anything, it's that I've inherited my father's eccentric curiosity for the unexplained.
You've inherited his dishonesty.
Clark, look me in the eye and tell me you don't have any hidden places of your own where you keep your deep, dark secrets.
Ever since I've met you, I've been defending you. Making excuses for you to people like Pete, like my parents. Telling them you can trust Lex Luthor. He's a good guy. He's nothing like his father. I was wrong.
Covenant is the 22nd episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on May 19th, 2004. It was written by Todd Slavkin and Darian Swimmer with a teleplay by Alfred Goff and Miles Millar, directed by Greg Beeman. So, a couple things off the top here, Craig. I think Miles and Al were still writing, like, they were making sure that if they didn't write the story, they at least wrote the teleplay for, like, all the season premieres and season finales, right? That's something they kept doing for pretty much their whole run on the show, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they did in season 6 or 7, maybe. But still, it's like, Al and Miles played a huge part in this show. I mean, and that, you know, that actually kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier about, you know, they're feeling like different eras of the series. The first 3 seasons, obviously, they were probably their largest involvement. Because, you know, you didn't have people like Brian and Kelly or Tom and Darren all, you know, elevated to where they eventually became. I hear those credits, and it's like an all-star team for the show.
and Greg Beeman, right?
Yeah, and Greg Beeman. I mean, again, like, I'm watching this, and despite, you know, some visual effects have not aged that well. Mm-hmm. Like Clark getting his, you know, version of the Thanos snap near the end. But it looks really good. I mean, they pulled out all the stops for this.
Yeah, they must have saved some budget somewhere because it is on display here for sure.
That's why they got rid of Pete a week early so they could save his salary.
No, there is the inside scoop. There it is, guys. Yeah, you heard it here first. Well, you know, the episode starts out and we get we don't know who it is yet, but it's Kara at Supergirl, and she's, or is it? Well, it's funny. It reminded me of the Terminator, right? Yeah. You get this naked. It's because Terminator 3 just came out like a year before this, so I'm thinking of like the female Terminator because
I don't count any Terminator movies after 2. No, the direction was probably do sexy Terminator.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because strategically placed like branches and trees and bushes because she's naked, and then she wanders out into the road, and that blue Jeep that Smallville loves blowing up so much, they just blew it up in Talisman. They blow it up here again because it's coming down the road, and she does a whole like smash the hood. The car flips over and it blows up. It's actually a pretty impressive special effect because they use a physical car.
Yeah, but also, you know, things like that and what she does to the FBI dude whose name I can't remember. Just Loader. Know it's played by Gary Hudson.
Loader? Yeah.
Oh, because he looks like Kurt Loader?
No, yeah, well, that's his name, man.
Probably.
I didn't know his name until the last episode, honestly. So.
Yeah, but those should have been our hints that wasn't really Kara. That's it.
Because she wouldn't be so aggressive towards...
Yeah, like, you wouldn't make a Kryptonian like that. Like, if they'd intended her to be really be Supergirl like Laura Vandervoort eventually was, she wouldn't have been going around killing people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that those people straight up die. Like, that car flips over, blows up, and that's pretty dark, you know?
Yeah.
But then, it's kind of odd because there's this juxtaposition, like, this, like, dainty music, like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, and she's, like, going through the woods and going for the kin house, and I thought that was an interesting music choice, I guess, by Mark Snow. After she blows up this car, she goes up to the Kent farm, strategically placed fences to, you know, cover up her being naked, goes up to the door, knocks on it. I love Clark's reaction when he opens it up and he sees this naked girl at his door, right?
Well, I mean, I was going to say he probably doesn't get to look at naked girls very often, but he does have x-ray vision. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe once. She's like, my name's Kara. I'm from Krypton, and it's like, somebody save me. And as a comic fan, it's a big deal.
I found it a little jarring in this episode more than most. Like, she's, you know, she introduces herself, and it's very, like, subdued sound-wise. And then they cut into the theme song, and it's all, you know, what it is. And it just seemed, usually they build up to that a little bit more, I feel.
Ah, I got gotcha. You. It kind of whiplash into it. Yeah, I got gotcha. You.
Yeah, like, that was really cool. Again, it's so cool to think that we're seeing Supergirl on Smallville.
Yeah, and we'll get into it later on, but it's like they never thought they were going to use the real Supergirl. So they thought, oh, you know, we'll sneak this in here as a little, like, Easter egg, right? We cut back, and they found a flannel shirt for her to wear, so she's sitting on the couch talking to the Kents, and she explains that she came through a passage in the cave wall, and that she's from Krypton. And Clark's like, hey, Krypton exploded. And she's like, well, yes, it was physically destroyed, but it lives on through us, which is, like, such BS metaphysical.
But also, stuff. Like, it was interesting, too, because I think that's when the Kents and Clark realized that there might be something to what she's saying, because she's mentioning the caves. And like,
Kal-El.
Yeah. It's like she's saying these things. Of course, Jonathan points out, like, well, you know, she's not saying anything Dr. Swan doesn't know.
But yeah, I like that, too, because Martha's like, you think Dr. Swan's in her? He's like, I have no idea what that man's intentions are. And I'm like, I don't think the writers did either at the time.
yeah.
But so they're having this conversation and saying, like, you know, why she's there and stuff. But then we get a knock on the door, and Lex just comes in. I'm like, do you lock your doors, Kents? You know? I mean, seriously, for a family that needs to keep secrets, they just let people walk in their house whenever, right?
Yeah, they did. And then, you know, Clark's about to make an excuse for the girl in his room, and she's gone.
Yeah, and then so Lex had come to talk to Clark about how Lionel is going to get off on bail unless someone can, like...
Lock him up. Lock him up.
He's not the first innocent man to be imprisoned, Craig, as he says later in the episode. Lex says that he needs witnesses that have physically seen Lionel do something, and unfortunately most of those people end up dead. And Clark tells him that he'll come forward, and that, you know, he saw in Bell Rev in Asylum. This episode is full of, you know, callbacks for the whole season,
yeah.
Right? But when Lionel ordered the doctor to shoot him with electroshock treatment, even though it might make him a vegetable, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, Clark, you're kind of outing yourself here, because Lex is like, how could you have possibly known that? And he's like, well, I snuck in to try and save you, but I was too late, you know. So,
well, you know, that's another thing that kind of speaks to the relative brilliance of the first couple seasons of Smallville, is, you know, you'd have these episodes like Shattered in Asylum that might feel disconnected from the rest of the season, but then you have these plot threads that come up later, and it just all seems just so well crafted.
And it starts to make a wedge between Clark and Lex here, because Lex is the one who feels betrayed by Clark. He's like, you knew all along that my father killed his parents. Why didn't you tell me, you know? So
yeah,
they're keeping secrets from each other. So yes, obviously, as a Superman fan, you're going to side with Clark Kent and not Lex Luthor. But, you know, in just the context of the show here, they're both been keeping secrets from each other this whole time. So it's really hard to say, you know, who's keeping the worst secrets, right?
Yeah, I mean, pretty soon Lex is going to be like, Clark hiding secrets from me. Oh, that's long.
Clark, you invited me over for dinner last night. You're going to tell me something. What is it going to be?
Okay, yeah, that's what she does.
She literally does that. But,
but you know, like, again, that takes me back to being in the fandom at the time. And especially compared to now, how toxic things get with fandoms. It's like Lana was ridiculous with all this secret stuff, but it was kind of like charming and cute in its own weird way. It's like, here goes Lana again. It's like she was like our mascot.
Well, the end of the scene is, you know, they patch things up because, you know, Clark is going to go testify against Lionel, and Lex kind of brings him close. He says, and he says, "Your good friend Clark," you know. So that's a nice way to.
I hope nothing happens to our friendship.
Yeah, I hope that now that we've reaffirmed our close bond, that nothing will happen to mess it up. This episode. So then we cut to Lionel, and he's in all orange. He's in this federal, you know, cushy prison kind of place, and Loader is leading him in, and they kind of go back and forth about how. Lionel's like, "I thought we had a deal, Loader." And he's like, "How am I supposed to account for some bleach blonde Pulitzer wannabe pulling up some voicemail for some cold case from 30 years ago or whatever?" So,
and again, that's all tied together. You know what I mean? The stuff from earlier in the season.
Yeah, because Truth, a one-off kind of like goofy episode of like, what if somebody had the liar power, you know, or something, right? But the consequences of that episode do play big time into, you know, wrapping up a season-long arc here with Lionel, because yeah. that's where we got the evidence of his confession. But Lionel was also, he also asked Loader about looking into, I love how he refers to him as, "What about our other matter, Lex's friend?" He refers to him like that. And Loader's like, "Look, man, I'm off that. You know, you're on your own here." So then he leaves. But that's not the case, because I guess Loader, he figures he's going to, like, find out whatever secret this is for himself later, I guess, right?
Yeah, Loader later comes by.
He turns into Roger Nixon on us.
Yeah, and then Kara hears him, and she's not having it.
No, she's not. But so we cut back to the Kent farm, and Kara is now, like, in this white dress. Where did this white dress come from?
It's from Martha's days when they went to Woodstock in 69. Wait, Martha's not that old. She was 9, okay?
Is that her, like, evening wear? Like, I know, it's just, it's odd that Martha would have something like that hanging around the house.
Actually, that was Jonathan's.
That's joke. There it is.
Now you're picturing it.
I know, right? Well, you know, Kara, I guess, and this plays into, like, what her purpose here is. I guess it's to seduce Clark, right? Because she's... Because when she first shows up, it doesn't make it as blatantly clear of, like, what her objective here is. But now it's like, "I'm here to take you home, and, you know, you shouldn't concern yourself in the matters of these people and this and that."
And she mentions his mother.
Yeah, yeah. So that gets creepy later when she mentions his mom. But right now, they're keeping it sort of platonic, I guess, because they're both the last people of Krypton, but they don't go much further than that so far. But then she takes them up into the sky, and they fly, and that's really cool, huh? Because you didn't see that very much in Smallville.
And she said that he was doing it, too.
That's right.
You pay attention. Yeah. That was really neat. But again, you know, like, the whole thing about, you know, them having, like, a chemistry should have been another clue to us that that's not really Supergirl.
That's true, because as we know, they're supposed to be cousins. And that's speaking of The Last Jedi, right? I'm going to bring that up.
Oh, gosh.
But, you know, I had assumed, as most people did, that Rey was going to be related to Kylo Ren, you know? Either it was going to be Luke's daughter, or it was going to be, like, in the expanded universe, you got Jason and Jaina Solo. They were going to be brother, sister. They were going to be cousins. They're going to be something, right? So I'm watching The Last Jedi. I'm like, oh, they have this connection because they're related. Okay, cool. And I'm watching the whole movie, like, through that context, and it turns out they're not. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this is some kind of romance crap they're pulling on us now. I don't like this at all.
I mean, she's having psychic connections with him when he's shirtless.
Yeah.
No sense.
Anyway, but that's like, yeah, but that's a similar situation here, because as a Superman fan, you're like, oh, this is Kara, right? It's his cousin from Krypton.
Although, there were some Silver Age comics where I think there was one where Superman was going to marry Supergirl.
You mentioned that. I do remember, like, you know, whenever you see those articles about, like, the 10 crazy Supermans comic covers, you know, I've seen something like that.
You know, maybe things are different on Krypton. Yeah. Maybe it's like West Virginia.
Anyway, apologies to our West Virginian audience.
Okay, I'm going to make fun of Florida instead.
There you go.
Okay, no, just kidding.
Well, they fly here, and it is very reminiscent of what you see in Superman the movie with Clark and Lois, or even, you know, even more so down the road in Superman Returns with Clark, Superman and Lois flying around, just the way they kind of float up and stuff like that here.
And Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. Totally.
That's true. Let's not forget them.
Matt.
So they go back to the caves, and Clark notices, like, oh, this Fisher wasn't here before. She's like, yes, that's where I emerged from. And what is this, the room? Like, this Fisher, right? It, you know, it opens and closes and stuff in the course of this episode. Is this the same, like, is the room from season 4 onward in? Is that where this is, behind that wall? I mean, is there, I need to find Clark's map to the cave that, like, who was it, Lana found that one time or something? Or was it Lex or somebody? Somebody found, like, this map to the cave in, like, Clark's barn once. I need to take a look at that.
Boy. Yeah, I've completely blocked that out of my mind. Sorry.
Oh, man. Well, she keeps trying to tell him, like, oh, you need to come with me, and all your, you know, no one will ever understand, you know, what you go through. And he's like, what if I like it on this planet, right? And but she's like, starts to, like, kind of, like, touch him, and like, what's going on here?
And she reminds him of how Pete's leaving and how Lana's leaving.
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's true. But it is rather convenient timing, you know.
Yeah.
With all these people betraying, because she's like, everyone will lie, betray, or leave you. And he's like, okay, sure, whatever. I'm never going with you.
And also, why is Lana leaving for Paris before she graduates high school?
Because she wanted to go to the Paris School of the Arts, Craig. I mean, we've all been there. So.
Yeah, sure.
Well.
And then she'll move back just as easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, you know, Clark makes it very firm stance here. He's like, look, I'm not going with you. And she's like, well, when you change your mind, I'll be waiting. And I guess she just hangs around the Kents for this next couple days or something. But anyway, we cut to the next scene, and it's Lex and Lionel. This is a great scene between them, because he's like, orange is a good look on you, Dad. I don't know about, might get stale after 25 to life, which is a good way to intro this. And Lionel here, you know, it's tough because, like, you want to think Lionel is, like, actually apologizing to Lex. He's like, Lex, I failed you as a father. This isn't easy for me to say, blah, blah, blah. But then he keeps talking, and you realize he's just trying to get sympathy from Lex, because he tells him about his, you know, liver disease, which he said he was diagnosed with 2 years ago, which would be the end of season one, I guess, Craig?
Around the time he went blind.
Mm-hmm. So here's a theory. Here's a fan theory. Whatever kind of procedure he went through to regain his sight gave him this liver disease. How about that?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay, all right.
I think they probably already forgot about the whole blind Lionel thing, like most people did.
That's probably
kind of like how they forgot about Lucas.
That's oh my god, Luke! That's my favorite plot hole of all time on the show. But anyway,
no, but the other thing about this scene in particular, and of course we see a change to this later, is Lionel, like, totally lives up to his name in the scene. He looks like a lion. He has that big mane of hair, which just seems to be there just to mock Lex for being bald.
Yeah, it's like he would never have grown his hair out, like, this long if his son could grow hair, right?
Yeah, it's like peak Lionel there too, and it's like he's trying to manipulate things, and it's again Glover was wonderful bouncing off of other people, but him and Rosenbaum had a really good bond going on there.
Absolutely, but. Then Lex doesn't buy it, though, because ultimately Lionel's like, "Don't let me die in prison," and Lex, like, he kind of grabs his hand through the cage, and you think they're gonna might have a moment, and he's like, "That might have been more effective if you had a string quartet in the corner, Dad." So it's like, "Oh, okay, I see how it is." So, but Lionel kind of reacts to it too. He's like, "Oh, damn, this didn't work." He's like, "Well, I've told my doctors to release my medical records to you," because Lex doesn't believe him. He thinks it's just some desperate last attempt to get out of
which Lionel does often,
which, yeah, exactly, right? So so we come back to the Kents, and Kara is still hanging around, and Clark's telling him that he thinks she's for real because of all the cave stuff and the Krypton stuff, and they make their Dr. Swan reference here, and Jonathan starts to interject himself into the situation, but then Kara's like, "You have no place in this discussion, Jonathan Kent. You broke the covenant."
So yeah,
we have our plus one for episode title, said an episode.
But also, that calls back to the start of the season.
Yeah, it's true. So we finally get the answer to, you know, what this deal is Jonathan made with Jor-El. You know, we always assume that, like, okay, I'll give you these powers, but you're going to have side effects from it. So it's like, okay, but now this is even worse. This deal is getting worse all the time, right? Because not only that, but he agreed to bring Clark to Jor-El when he was ready. And so all these, when Jor-El was ready for him. So all the stuff this season has been that, like, legacy and all that. That's been Jor-El trying to get Jonathan to fulfill his end of the bargain, I guess.
But here's the other thing. When you think about it, ultimately that's what Jonathan did in the series finale. I'm not joking. He tells Clark to always hold on to Smallville, but gives him the costume with the Kryptonian sigil on it. which kind of delivers him to Jor-El in a way.
I guess. But at that point, Jor-El wasn't like an evil asshole like he is in the first couple
But that's
years
the other thing I think is really interesting, though, you know, again, with legacy of it all, is, you know, Lex is kind of like, was it Lex or was it Lionel who's like, you know, you don't know what it's like to have an awful father.
Oh, yeah, that's later on this episode, right?
When okay, and then Clark's Clark. Kind of like, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, I kind of do. Yeah.
You know, again, great writing, great interplay between the actors. Again, I thought this was one of Tom's best performances in the entire series, this episode.
Oh, yeah.
He was really on, and it was just really well done.
Well, they're having this conversation here, and, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, at some point here, Kara drinks tea out of a cup, or at least picks it up or something, so the Kents have that, and John's going to use that in a minute here, but while they're having this conversation, you know, Jonathan reveals to them, like, you know, reveals to Martha and Clark what his deal with Jor-El was, and then Martha gets really upset about it, but they get interrupted because Loader's outside doing his best Roger Nixon impression, listening to the Kents with his parabolic dish. But Kara goes out there and vaporizes his car. And as you said, Craig, this is another sign. This isn't the Supergirl we knew because...
And those aren't really Kryptonian powers.
No, those are not Kryptonian powers. Now, the speculation that I had seen back in the day, probably on Krypton site, because I was active on the forums back in season 3 through 5, was that this was like tactile telekinesis, which is a power that Superboy has. Not the Kal-El Superboy, the Kal-El Superboy, who was a clone of Lex Luthor and Clark Kent. Blah, 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 blah. Comics are the worst, I know, but it's very confusing.
It's the Clicks, baby.
Yes, who we actually get on the show at some point. The show ran so long, we did get Kal-El. He did not have tactile telekinesis, though. But that's the best explanation that the people had for it. And yeah, she just vaporizes his car. So yeah, secret safe. Thanks, Kara. But this really freaks out Martha. She's like, he murdered a man. We have to call the sheriff. And Jonathan's like, what do you want us to do, honey? Call the cops and say, you know, this alien girl vaporized a federal agent. It's like, good point, Jonathan. So, but this pushes Jonathan over the edge. She's like, I got to do something here. So this is when he takes that teacup that Kara had held to the torch. And this is when he makes his comment. So this is the legendary torch. You know, he's never been there. And as you said, Craig, you get some... It's nice to see interactions between characters that don't often interact. And Jonathan is clearly out of his element here, but he's like, Chloe, I understand you're very good at finding things out, and I need you to find out who the last person who touched this cup was. So she gets on the phone, and she calls, and Jonathan's like, gonna wait there?
and she looks really uncomfortable. She's like, go away already?
This might take a while. He's like, oh, yeah, okay, and he leaves. But we have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections, because she's like, oh, let me call my guy. Like, she has a guy for this, right?
She's maybe it's Chad the Goth.
It's Chad. Oh, it's not easy being Smallville's only goth. But then Lana comes in for one of her, like, two scenes.
Did she just wash her hair, by the way?
Oh, my goodness. I was just going to say, what is up with her hair in this episode?
And it later ended up in the credits.
Yeah, season 4 credits. This is immortalized. I can't... Yeah. Are there other episodes where she has this hairstyle? Just so random. Yeah. It's like Kristen Kirk was, like, working on another show or a play or something, and he had to have her hair a certain way.
No, to me, it looked like Lana just, like, washed her hair before she was going to the airport
just
and forgot to dry it.
Just got out of the shower and drove right over to the Kent farm.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just very odd because usually she's, like, got it in a ponytail or she's got something. It's very odd, and it stuck out because we just saw her, like... By the way, because I mentioned this in the last episode, Forsaken, like, she was supposed to leave on, like, Saturday. Right, so this must be the Friday in between the Thursday of Forsaken and the Saturday of her leaving. So this is a very condensed timeline of events here. But anyway, yeah, she looks
well,
not
she
like
she took
herself.
The time to wash her hair in between episodes.
I guess she took a long hot shower after being disappointed by Clark at the end of the last episode. But yeah, she's here to find out more Clark's secrets. As she does.
You were gonna tell me a secret last night, Clark.
Well, here's the deal. I understand why Clark didn't tell her then, because Pete had literally just, like, told him, hey, I can't handle holding your knowing your secret, and I'm going to move now. You know?
Yeah,
so
that's
true. I get why Clark was, like, all in, going to tell Lana, and then, like, when his best friend had to move because he couldn't take it, he changed his mind. But that's a real crappy thing to do to Lana. And again, like, if I were Lana, I probably wouldn't have come. I guess she just really needs to know. But if I were Lana, like, I would not have come back to ask him. That's right. That's the real reason she came back. She asked him to be his her super shuttle to the airport.
So they had a Superman pun, a super.
Yeah, but why do people make Superman puns in a world where there's no Superman, Craig? Riddle me that, huh?
I didn't know you had a dark side.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Clark, and then Clark, you know, he agrees to take her to the airport. I don't know why he keeps agreeing to do these things, which he knows he won't be able to do. Like, it's inevitable something bad was going to happen to keep him from doing that.
And you didn't mention Kara is, like, walking around and Lana's like, who's that?
Being he's a creeper.
Like, he's my cousin.
She's from far away, from California. So,
which is where Kara is from on Supergirl.
There it is, man. It all ties together.
California.
Is Midvale California? I always thought it was like in, I don't know.
I knew National City is supposed to be.
National City is supposed to be Los Angeles. Is that correct?
Well, it was at least.
It wasn't season one.
Now it looks more like Vancouver, but you know.
Looks a lot like Star City and Central City to me now. But anyway, yeah. So that's a funny, like, it's kind of like Crypto, right? Where they almost name him Crypto, right? Like Shelby, but they don't.
Right.
So it's like, oh, that's my cousin. You know, it's like, ah, ha, ha, you get it? It's not really, but.
But
know,
again, Clark and Lana aren't together. I mean, he could have just tried to make her jealous.
It's my girlfriend. Yeah, I'm going to go. You know, you're going to Paris. I'm going to go another dimension with this girl. So peace out.
Yeah, Lana. It's my girlfriend from Canada.
So Lana leaves, but they have a happy last scene because Clark's like, all right, we'll talk in the car. I'm like, is he going to tell her his secret now? I don't think so. You know, like when he drove her to the airport. But that's a great way. I used to use that strategy a lot when I wanted to spend time with girls. I was like, hey, let me drive you here. Let me take you there. You know, that's key time. Because you have a captive audience. You got to make the most of that time, you know. So I drove around a lot of girls back in the day. But anyway, that's a story for another time. anyway, Kara comes up after she drives off. It's kind of creepy, actually. She's just, like, at a super speeds behind him. And she's like, she really loves you, but it's not meant to be. And Clark's like, nobody knows what's meant to be. He's very defensive about it.
He's like, well, you haven't read the comic books, have you? Oh wait, yeah. I'm supposed to be with Lois.
It's funny,
but
because
Chloe's going to change her name.
Yeah, we'll talk about Chloe changing her name to Lois at the end of this when she gets blown up and goes into FBI protection. But anyway, it's true they're not meant to be. So that's good writing there. But what is up with Kara's like intuition in this episode? Like she like meets people and like. Like the like that guy was gonna expose your secret.
She downloaded all that information from Jor-El.
Okay,
everything the Jor-El AI knows about Clark, she could theoretically know.
Okay,
and Jor-El of course knows about his weakness for Lana.
Yeah, because he projected her at the end of last season to him. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
these people have served their purpose. Stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. But this is when she really like turns up the whole hey. I'm Eve and you're Adam situation going on here because she's like, yeah, that love will not even compare to the love between us. And he's like, whoa. You know, he doesn't really respond to this, but it's like she's just laying it on thick now. She's like, we're the last of our race and it's our duty to continue the legacy of Krypton. So it's like, well, that's a pretty heavy thing to just throw on him there. But then he kind of stumbles back inside because he's like, God, what is going on here? I'm overwhelmed with all this crap. And then there's a delivery guy and he has a package from Lionel Luthor. And Clark opens it, and it's a key.
And it's an actual key, not
an
like
actual
key. Disc
yeah.
or anything.
Which I love this scene, the next scene between Clark and Lionel. This is a very Superman Luthor scene, like from the comic books or another show. You know, you just imagine, you know, this is Lex and this is Superman. And he shows up, he's like, what is this? And I love it. Lionel says, like, it's a key. Unfortunately, not the one we're both looking for. And I'm like, it's so good, because that's what I was thinking. But. Oh, by the way, we also have a plus one for our blue shirt, red jacket, because Clark is now, he's back in the pseudo Superman costume. And this is a great scene here because they're going back and forth and Lionel says that he didn't kill his parents, which Lionel killed his parents, right, Craig? Because
I can't remember that either. It's been too long.
Well, I know that he goes, there's lots of episodes, or I say lots, there's a few instances where this comes up and he denies that he killed his parents, but I mean, he totally, like in Mercy, right? In Saw, right? He said, I didn't kill my parents, but he totally did. But, you know, Lionel does tell Clark, he's like, well,
no
I didn't.
Collusion.
No. He does tell Clark that, even though he didn't kill his parents, he didn't, you know, shed any tears at their funeral because, you know what it's like to live under the thumb of an oppressive, abusive father who wants complete control of your life. And you know, he doesn't realize it, but Clark, like, knows that exactly. He's going through that right now. So, that, like you said, that's really good writing here, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And in Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 3 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold.
Where you should also buy Seasons 4 through 7.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, those are also available there. Tom Welling had this to say, "I think Lionel is to Smallville what Lex is to the later Superman stories, and the stronger you can establish that, the more drama you can create. I like these grown-up storylines. We can sometimes get stuck in the high school mentality. The more grown-up situations we can get into, the more interesting it is, because then, at least with my character, he's a fish out of water. He doesn't yet have the maturity to handle those situations, and I think it added to the drama to the end of the year."
Man, it must have been nice to get Tom Welling for that book.
I knew you were going to say something about that. I think
damn.
That's Tom Welling's last quote in any Smallville Companion. I think that's it. So I had to get that in there, Craig.
I'm going to cry now.
I'm sorry. Yes, Tom Welling.
Like, Tom, you're hiding secrets from me.
Tom Welling declined to be interviewed for Seasons 4 through 7 of the Smallville Companion.
No, he was going to do Season 7, but he ran off.
Well, you know, that's what Clark does, man. All right, you're Chloe at the that's dance true. There. You're looking around for him. He's gone. He's off to do other things.
Oh, God. I'm having... We need to, like, remake that moment.
Just and you just, looking around.
Be standing there.
Yes, that's
or, been... I could be Lana at the airport waiting yeah. for Clark, and yeah. then I find a flower on the ground.
Rosenbaum will come give you a hug. Don't worry. Oh, man. But, yeah, that's been a funny point of conversation with me and Craig over the years here is that, yes, Tom Welling was supposed to be in the Season 7 Companion interview, and he notoriously ducked out of an interview.
He even told Glover he was going to do it. Ask Glover about it on Twitter.
Craig. <I'm just> Oh, God. That's so good. But, hey, we'll get him for the Season 8 book, won't we, Craig?
He might be busy at a convention.
Look, if you pay the $150 to meet him and get your picture with him, I'm sure he'll give you a quote for the next book, okay? So,
yeah, but by the time I get the book published, the books probably won't even pay $150.
Anyway, lots of tangents here. This is a great scene between Lionel and Clark here. And, you know, we're talking about Greg Beeman being such a great director. Like, I love how, like, the first shot of this is, like, you see Clark kind of out of focus. And Lionel's in the foreground, and it kind of when he hears that Clark's there, you see like that like kind of wicked smile on his face, and the camera just like dollies in on John Glover, and I was like, that's a great directorial moment by the Beeman touch here. He tells Clark that Lex has lied and manipulated, and he's going to prove it to him. He's like, I don't want to harm you. I want to enlighten you. You know, and Clark does mention the last time he trusted Lionel, he ended up as a lab rat at Summerhole, which is a great callback to Memoria. So the show. You know, for a show which I make fun of all the time for having no internal continuity, they really are calling back a lot of relevant things.
Again,
here.
This season, they, like, so much paid off. I mean, it wasn't like Season 2 where we never saw Lucas again, but still.
Or Season 4 where, and that's the thing. I was saying this last week, talking about Forsaken, is Season 3, they had a plan and they executed it. And it shows. And I think really the only other season, honestly, and maybe you can, confirm this, is like Season 9, like they had a plan and it feels like a nice continuous arc and there are no like weird tangents or interruptions. Like everything pays off. They're set up.
Or it characters. Wasn't like, let's do this season and we'll have the clone grow up to be the real Lex. Oh, wait.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they were dealing with like 8 was like, hey, are we going to get Rosenbaum back? Like, we're going to keep trying. We're going to use body doubles and all this stuff. Oh, he's not going to come back. Crap.
7, which was like, oh, crap, we need to write as many scripts as possible before the writer's strike.
Uh-huh. And then you had 4 where Christopher Reeve died. You know, he was going to be a bigger part. So they kind of brought in Jane Seymour to kind of fill some of that role,
Margot Kidder.
Margot Kidder, who didn't, like, she came back and then she refused to keep coming back. And that screwed him over again there. I guess 5 is pretty solid. But again, they thought 5 was going to be the last season.
So then they pulled out all the stops for 5.
Right, and they had to pull the brakes.
And then they thought 7 was going to be the end.
Right. So I guess what's Season 6's excuse then? Why is it... What's wrong with...
Okay, the deal with Season 6, and, I might be talking out of class, so, like, Alan Miles, if you're listening, don't get mad at me. Uh-huh. I feel like the thing was that Al and Miles were heavily involved with the first 13 episodes of the season.
The good ones.
So pretty much through Justice, or the one at right after Justice. And then the rest went off the rails. You kind of had the same issue with season 5 when you think about it. Like, you know, the first 13 episodes or so are really strong, and then it kind of lost its way a little bit.
Although season five ended pretty strong, I think. And even, you know...
Oh, it did, because Al and Miles come back for the finale.
Right. Yeah, that's they're like, what have you done?
That's the other thing that's very interesting about Smallville, is some of the seasons that weren't the best seasons had some of the best finales. Like, Commencement was amazing. Phantom was pretty strong for season 6. You know, and season 6... I know you love season 9, but the season 9 finale, was that Salvation?
That is my favorite episode of the show, Craig. What are you going to
say
about
it? That is such a good finale.
Okay, but I love Demon, too. So, I got you. Okay, I thought you were going to say something bad about it.
No. It's like, that was like an epic hour of television. Kind of like Covenant. I do like Covenant better.
Look,
but...
there's only three bad Smallville finales. Okay? There's
Doomsday finale,
and Arctic.
Arctic was just disappointing. I guess so.
Yeah, exactly. So getting back on track here, Lionel has this key that Lionel has given Clark is to the chamber of Clark Kent. So Clark goes in there, and it's all the same stuff we've seen before. He's got the bullets from Red. He's got the Rush bug from Rush. He's got some kryptonite green with a little bit of red in there. We see for some reason the giant blow up pictures that we always make fun of. You know, we see the animation of the car accident. So Clark's just looking around, seeing all this stuff. And, of course, Lex comes in. And I love what he first says. He's like, before you jump to conclusions, Clark. But Clark cuts him off, and he's pissed, and rightly so. Right, Greg?
Also, just the notion that, you know, Lex is in his 20s, and he's obsessing over a teenager is kind of creepy.
Yeah, but you take all this stuff out.
It's almost Bryan Singer territory here.
Hey, so Lex tries to spin it like, I know this seems like it's about you, but it's really about me. Lex is so full of crap. Clark's not having it anymore, right?
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, well, you lied to me, Lex. This friendship's over. Oh, wait, that's later.
That is later. But Clark does have a great line here to Lex. And he says, ever since I met you, I've been defending you, making excuses
to my dad and Pete and...
Yeah, tell him you can trust Lex Luthor. He's a good guy. He's nothing like his father. I was wrong, and he storms out at that point. And that's a great way to kind of end their friendship, you know.
And again, you feel like when you're watching this episode that the rift is there. I think the other thing that was really great about this finale in this period of time is back then shows didn't last as long as they do now. I think maybe we saw Smallville as a 5-season journey. Mm-hmm. So this was like the 60% point of the
series. Yeah, you're in the middle. Season 3 is the dead center of the show. So you think, like, there's going to be progress here, forward movement toward the eventual end, right?
Yeah, and, I mean, so that made it feel even more momentous for us when we're watching.
Which made Season 4 even more disappointing when they just hit the reset button, right?
I like Season 4 now.
All right, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it soon.
It had a good companion book. Oh, my dog doesn't agree, though.
All right.
Sorry, Vader.
I'll give it another chance. Sorry, Vader.
But she got mad.
I know, right? Ooh, speak ill of season 4. So all right, I got it. All right. Gosh. Tough crowd. So, Clark goes home to talk to his mom about this, and he's like, I can't believe he just pretended to be my friend for 3 years just to investigate me. Now, I think that's a little harsh. I think they were really friends, but Lex just really wanted to know Clark's secret. I mean, you know.
But I like that Martha was a good sounding board here, which is something they would sometimes forget to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good use of the parents in this episode, yeah, for sure. Wonderful. And but as they're having this conversation, Clark realizes that he forgot to take Lana to the airport. Way to go, Clark. Way to go again. Let her down again. Again, Lana, if this is the real world, this is like 5 times over. Lana would never talk to Clark again at this point, right?
And also, like, Lana clearly washed her hair again right before this scene.
Yes. Yeah, what is up with her hair? Oh boy, but she
and speaking of people in hair, somebody without any hair comes to meet her there at the airport.
That's right. Again, and cue the Lexana setup here. I did like before she runs into Lex though, she like, you know, she kind of bumped into some people like or like say goodbye passionately, like kissing it. So I thought that was a nice touch. It's like, here, Lana, here's what you should be doing, but your boyfriend or your ex boyfriend or your not boyfriend or whatever Clark and they are, he's not here. But Lex is, and yay.
And also Lana's like, I really appreciate your friendship.
Yeah.
Like the time you bought the Talon for me and that's the only thing you've ever done for me, but okay.
Did she just like friend zone him right then?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. He also like taught her Lana Phil.
That's right. That which yeah. comes in handy more as the series progresses. But
time she impales somebody.
So I added Lana Kills to the tally board for Matt Truex, our mutual friend Matt Truex. And she has yet to kill someone else. It's a whole season, Matt. I got a category sitting at one just for you, buddy. But I'm pretty confident Lana starts killing more people as the series progresses, Craig. So we'll see. So
yeah. Anyway.
But
she didn't kill anybody in that focus episode.
That's terrible. Spell is the worst episode of the show possibly.
But we'll I'm see. Not coming on the show that week.
So of course Clark shows up and sees this, right? Sees Lana and Lex like hugging from across
the
street. He's
gotten her a flower and he drops it on the ground.
A white rose, right? Aww. And he drops it in slow motion, right? But then Lex leaves, and then I like this. It's kind of a callback to Exile, where Lana sees Clark in the distance at Lex's funeral. I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I drew the connection. I thought it was cool because she tries to, like, you know, work her way through the traffic to see Clark, but he's gone by then. Much like at Lex's funeral, she tries to work her way through the crowd to see Clark, but he's gone by then as well. And she finds the white rose. So I don't know, like, I don't know. Could these people have cell phones? Couldn't she like call him or he call her? I don't know, man. But
cell phones were a lot more expensive in 2004.
Chloe specifically says that Clark has a cell phone because when he doesn't show up at the courtroom, Lex is like, "Did you try calling him?" And she's like, "Yeah, I called him on his cell phone and his home phone. He's not anyway."
Well, it's not like watching early Dawson's Creek where you're like yelling at your TV, like, "Dawson, why don't you just call Jen?" Oh, wait, you don't have cell phones.
Well, this is about, I don't know, I think the time code is like 30 minutes now. So now Lana is officially out of the episode. We can get down to our adult business. Lana is going off the pair. Much like Pete last week, Lana's gone this week, and now we never see those characters again, do we, Craig?
No, never.
No, never again.
And when Lana dies later, then she's really gone.
Yeah. Multiple times, mind you. But anyway, you know, there was an earlier scene with Chloe and Lex talking about her testifying and Lex telling her how dangerous it'd be. And she sets up, oh, it's not going to be. We'll be safe. The FBI is setting us up in a safe house or whatever, witness protection program, you know, because she's going to change her name to Lois Lane, become a reporter. But anyway, that's beside the point. Chloe and Lex are waiting for Clark at the courthouse and they can't find him. And Lex is worried because he thinks, you know, maybe he's not going to show up now. And then Clark shows up and she says, just in time to save the day, which is kind of a Superman reference, I guess.
But I also like that Clark's like, I'm here because it's the right thing to do, which is a very Superman thing to say.
Exactly. He's like in full like adult Superman mode at this point.
Especially because he's got the red jacket and the blue shirt thing going on.
He's walking through the crowd. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I mean, if this had been a Zack Snyder movie, the courthouse would have blown up with everybody in it. Walked out.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. But hey, hashtag time's up for Lionel because he's denied bail. And so he's like let out.
Lock him up.
So he's escorted out of the courtroom, and as he says, he's not the first innocent man to be put in jail. But
no collusion.
No collusion. Lex, give me that stuff, man. Lex tries to like kind of like make, hey, Clark, man, I really appreciate you coming. He's like, this friendship is over. You know, that's where the line comes from. And I feel like that was used in like so many like trailers for this show and stuff like that. But anyway, it does seem rather definitive at this point because, as you said, 5-year show, 3 years in, we know these guys are gonna be enemies.
Well, also, like the notion the pilot when Jonathan's like, you know, ask some question. Clark's like, ask me again in about 5 years. I'm like, okay.
Well, 5 years.
That's when the final episode airs.
Or if you're Star Trek and you have a 5-year mission, it could only last 3 years. So watch out, guys. But anyway, Clark goes back to the bar now. He's all depressed, and I guess he has no reason to stay because Lana's gone, and Pete's gone, and Alexa isn't his friend. He doesn't give a crap about Chloe or his parents, apparently.
And then his cousin starts to kiss him.
Yeah, okay, really. Now this is where it gets creepy, because she's like, well, he tells her, like, oh, everything you said came to pass, you know? It's like, well, come on, man. Like, that's just bad timing. But she's like, oh, well, come with me, and her love will be there for you, too. And he's like, her? He's like, yeah, your mother, Lara. And so, again, good continuity into Memoria, or how they're calling that back. You pulling out all the stops to get Clark's attention.
And also, like, watching the episode now, I'm picturing Helen Slater when she says it.
There you go. Well, who do you picture Jor-El? Julian Sands or Terrence Stamp?
No. Actually, if I had been casting the show, Jor-El and Lara would have been Stacey Haydick and Gerard Christopher, which would mean both of Clark's mothers had been Alana.
I think you say that every time you're on the podcast, but that's okay because I 100% agree with you.
I know. I'm going to keep saying it. Because also, Gerard Christopher looks at least slightly like Tom Welling.
Right. So it's like
more than Julian Sands does.
There's no way young Tom Welling grew into Julian Sands.
I mean, it's kind of like the holographic doctor being Jason Teague's father.
That was a recast, though, so I'll give him some credit there. For they weren't even supposed to film those episodes, okay? Those were the extra episodes of season 7.
Sure.
So, anyway, yeah, so she starts telling Clark about, like, his mother's love, and then she starts kissing him, like, on the cheek and the forehead and then on the mouth. You're like, this just got really incestuous and weird now, right? Well, I was uncomfortable by this.
Kind of weird, yeah.
You know, we cut the commercial, we come back, you know, Jonathan's looking for Clark, Martha says he's gone, he's gonna go look for him, and then Chloe drives up just in time to save the day. I wonder if this, I mean, 3 hours from Metropolis, I'm not gonna do that.
Oh, yeah. No, by this point, it was just like 12 miles away.
I guess so, right. It's a small town right outside the city, as Lionel describes it in season 7. Yeah. So, Chloe's connection has found out who had held the teacup, basically. We don't find out, right? Jonathan, like,
right.
Even Chloe's like, even me, you know, master of the wall and weird, found this one pretty weird. And he looks at it, and we know it's, like, going to be a big deal, right? But then we cut to the inside of the cave, and Clark and Kara are doing their Wonder Twin Powers Activate thing, and the fissure opens up, and, it's this blinding light. And
strangely, that shot is, like, the first two pages of the Smallville visual guide that I wrote.
Why are all the promotional images of this episode, like, from the last scene? Like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, they open the portal, and I'm going to say that this is the new room from season 4 with the slab, where you put the crystals of power in and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go with that. But anyway, Jonathan shows up, and he's like, Clark! She's not a Kryptonian. Chloe looked it up. Her name's Lindsay Harrison. He's yelling because it's loud in there, I guess. But anyway, I don't need to yell. Her name's Lindsay Harrison. I like how he says she was arrested for shoplifting.
Well, that's how they had her fingerprint.
Right. So it's like, I find it amusing. Like, that's the crime they thought was, like, okay. She has to have be, quote unquote, in the system, but we don't want to make her too bad. So right. We'll say she was arrested for, I don't know, shoplifting. Winona Ryder's a shoplifter. Everybody still loves her. We can get away with that. So, her car got hit with a direct hit from the meteor, and they never found her body. You know, I think I'll take a screenshot of this obituary, by the way, and post it, just because I paused it, and there actually is, it's not gibberish. Some of it actually is written, so it is interesting. And they have, Adrian Pilecki's, like, a headshot or something in the article there.
Nice.
But it looks that way to me, anyway. But instead of getting powers or something, she was just, I don't know,
her body was taken into the cave and just kept for safekeeping.
Okay, explain this to me, Craig. How did this take place?
Okay, here's my feeling. Jor-El, like, found, you know, whatever, found Lindsay Harrison's body, was able to suck it into the cave, and just kept it in stasis for 16 years.
Just in case his teenage son didn't want to come with him. He would wipe this girl's mind.
Yeah, or maybe it just, like, it took her imprint, kind of like Phoenix and Jean Grey in the comics.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, you know, regardless, this is a plus one for amnesia, because Lindsay doesn't know who she is, and a plus one for under the influence, because she's under the influence of Jor-El. But yeah, see, here's the thing. I always thought, Jor-El, like the Jor-El AI, came with the ship and the key, right? And then the ship blew up, but it was still in the key. And then when Clark put the key in the cave, he went into the cave, right?
Okay.
But if he was already in the cave, like who physically like drug her into the cave? It doesn't make any sense. Dr. Spock. It doesn't make any sense, man.
I don't care. This episode was awesome.
Okay, but there are some serious plot holes here.
I don't care. The episode was awesome.
All right, okay.
I'll tweet at Al Goff and be like, "Where was she?
Please,
who took her in there?"
We need answers, Miles and Al. But the episode gets a lot more awesome because we hear Terrence Stamp. He's back as Jor-El. Terrence Stamp returns. Yeah, he's like, "Come to me, Kal-El." He sounds more Zod here than any other time, you know. But he vaporizes Lindsay here, right?
Yeah.
So no more Supergirl, right? So, oops, I guess that wasn't the real one, huh, Craig?
Yeah, I guess not. I mean, they'll just have to get a hotter one like 4 years later.
Well, that's debatable. But anyway.
Oh, do not diss Laura Vandervoort's my queen.
Well, they're both beautiful women. I'm just saying. He starts I like the Kryptonian like tentacle that comes out, you know. It kind of fits the technology we saw earlier with like the when they're talking to him in the void or whatever, the tendrils of energy. So I like how that's coming out and choking Jonathan. Now, this is Jor-El. He's straight up evil Jor-El here. But you know, I've talked about this with a few guests, and I like the approach that Jor-El was kind of not the nice, like it's a fresh approach, you know, that he was kind of a questionable guy, you know, more like Zod than a traditional Jor-El. And much like Lex has Lionel, Clark has Jor-El, and they have to overcome their, you know, their biology to be better people.
Whatever the hell is going on here.
Very good. Very good. So, but yeah, so you know, you had a story about the Supergirls here. Now that the Supergirl's gone, did you want to tell it?
Yeah, no, what I was going to say is I thought one of the big missed opportunities of Smallville later on was that they never mentioned the other Kara. Like, when real Kara showed up, I would have wanted to find out, like, then was that character that Jor-El brought over based on the real Kara? Like, I think, or they could have, I don't know, I think it just would have been interesting to play with that story as part of the history and the mythology of the series. And it would have given the other Kara something to do.
Well, there's one line of dialogue in season 7 where Clark goes to the Foresters, he says... He tells Jor-El, "There's a girl named Kara that showed up on my doorstep. The last time that happened, you had something to do with it," or something along those lines, you know. And Jor-El says, "Jor-El says I have nothing to do with her arrival." Like Jor-El doesn't like this Kara, you know, the new one, as opposed to this one who he likes a lot. So, but yeah, I mean, Adrian Pilecki was never going to come back on Smallville, right?
Why not?
Well, because she got vaporized, so the character he would never come back to this character.
Yeah, but Jor-El could make a new one.
Make it.
Okay. I mean, how many times did Brainiac come back?
Well, all right, maybe so. Krypton works in mysterious ways, I guess. But anyways, that's the end of this iteration of Supergirl. And we didn't get to see her very much, but at the time it was like a big deal.
Wait till the DC crossover next month when Adrienne Palicki will show up as Power Girl. I'm kidding, I think.
That would be really inside baseball and really amazing. I think it'd be great.
Well, we need to talk about that, but after we're done talking about this episode.
For sure. So, okay. Jonathan's getting strangled here by Jor-El, and he's like, "Go ahead, son. I don't care what Jor-El does to me. I lived a full life. You go be free." And he's like, "I'll never be free." So Clark kind of accepts the fact that he needs to go into the fissure, right?
Spoiler warning, you're going to die in 2 years, Jonathan.
Yeah. What a waste. So I think it's supposed to be Clark walks into the fissure, but it kind of sucks him in without him moving. So
it's
kind of
like the Thanos snap.
It is. He gets kind of disintegrated that way. It digitized, you know, it sucked in. I think maybe they didn't get the coverage they needed that day. Like they needed a shot of Tom Welling walking towards the opening, but they didn't get it. He's just standing there and he gets sucked in. And then the tendril, everything turns off. The cave closes and Jonathan's just left there, passed out. And then we get, like, the best ending montage you will see in any season of any television show. Don't we, Craig?
It's amazing. You know, just... And also, I should give you some trivia about when Lionel's getting his head shaved. One of the people shaving his head, I believe his name was Rick Ferrassi. He was actually the security guard on the Smallville lot. And he appears in the prison fight, I think in Transference, I think it was.
Oh, so that's good continuity there, huh?
Yeah, but he's the one that shaved Lionel's hair in that scene. So, you know, and also, you know, that was like, you know, Lionel losing his mane. But just everything going down, I mean, you were just left wondering, you know, you have the fire on the field that makes the weird symbol. And you have, we'll get to Chloe.
Yeah. Well, I really think what makes this whole montage, though, is the music. It's Mozart's Requiem in D, and it's so epic, you know? And so you have, we can go down in here. We have Lionel shaving his head, and that made him look more like, you know, Lex Luthor. In Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 3, available wherever books are sold, Al Goff says that was John Glover's idea. He was doing a play in Philadelphia for the summer and needed to cut his hair and said, what if we did it in prison on the show?
And I went to go see that play about a month later.
But, you did? Okay,
yeah,
very cool.
We'll get to that as well.
No, that's cool. But so he shaves his head and he looks like Lex here, from right? And you know, this fueled the fire
more than Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Batman versus Superman totally ripped off this scene. Oh my god, they ripped off so the DC whatever they call universe or EU or whatever they call it, like ripped off so actors,
that's pronounced
scenes.
Ew.
The DC ew. Totally. This is exactly what I thought of when the end of Batman vs. Superman, he shaved his head. But anyway, there was a lot of fan speculation that, and this is kind of crazy talk, right? But that Lionel would like become Lex or something, like some kind of brain switch or something, because he's like the more villainous one. And
I've never heard that, but I've heard that would be a great episode if him and Clark switched for
one. Well, that added even more fuel to the fire, because that was kind of Lionel's plan. He was going to switch bodies with Lex. To escape his prison and his disease, but
yeah.
that's a crazy fan theory, you know. And I was talking about this another episode this season. We were talking about it, and like if Lionel Lex were like to switch bodies, and like the Lionel that this Lionel Luthor becomes the Lex Luthor of the future, that would just undermine all the character development between Clark and
Lex.
That
would be like if somebody made Lex forget his entire journey in the series.
And that, Craig, is exactly what I said when we were talking about it. It would just be the worst creative decision ever just to erase Lex's mind. But there is a precedent for stuff like that in the comics, though, right? You know, there's comics where Luthor switches bodies and brains.
Oh, like Lex Luthor Jr. was Lex Luthor.
Who was visually an inspiration for Lionel Luthor. So anyway, I can see it's a fun kind of fan rabbit hole theory to go down, but they would never, ever, ever do that in 1,000 years.
I mean, they'll have Chloe become Lois.
Yes! Yes, exactly. The next one is Chloe goes to the safe house, right? And
here's the thing that makes no sense. Well, two things. Number one, is this the last time we actually see Gabe?
It is. Maybe he didn't make it out of the safe house.
But number two, you see Chloe just then walking in with her reflection in the door when the explosion goes off.
Yeah, they really compressed that time for this episode, and they really extend it quite a bit in Gone when they reveal that she didn't really die.
Yeah.
So that's a bit. You know, something I did notice this time, though, by the way, Robert Wise in his last appearance as Gabe, great to see him. I don't know why he just like disappeared from the show. They forgot he existed.
Hired from acting.
Oh, okay, he did? Okay. Well, he was a good actor, because I've seen him. He's in a couple episodes of The X-Files, and he's a great villain.
And he was
villain.
In Watchmen as Richard Nixon.
Was that him?
That might have been his last acting job. But okay. Yeah, because I asked why he wasn't in Bride.
Mm-hmm.
And the response I got from one of the writers was, oh, Gabe's still alive? And I'm like, yeah.
That vaunted Smallville continuity. But anyway, I noticed that when Chloe looks back at the FBI car is about to drive off, it is Loader's partner from Legacy.
Huh.
So I had never noticed that before, and I was like, oh, okay, so he was in on it, and he's why the house blew up, I bet. Because he's the guy that's talking to Lex about, you know, Virgil Swan and Clark and Lionel, all this stuff in Legacy.
Yeah, I was actually watching for like a hint, like, was there a scene with Lex telling Chloe what's going on that we just didn't see on camera? You know, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
When I'm watching it.
Yeah, I mean, he had warned her earlier in the episode, but nothing like this, you know.
But again, that was
But yeah, that was great. And you think Chloe's dead. I mean,
yeah, well, I've got more to say about that, but we need to get through the other cliffhangers first.
Yeah, so we got that one. We have Lex being poisoned again with the poison drink, Lex. If I were Lex, I would not drink alcohol in my home ever again, right? Cuz this how many times has he been poisoned through his brandy?
And I have a picture that was taken about, you know, at that play that I saw Glover in Philly, where he's giving me Glover offered me a drink, and I'm like, I saw what you did to Lex. I don't want to drink. And so we took a picture of him, like, feeding me a drink. which I have somewhere, which is pretty amazing.
That's awesome, man. So that's that one. And obviously they're not going to kill Lex Luthor. So you think, okay, he's safe. I mean, and last season's cliffhanger was, oh, is Lex going to die? I mean, like, enough of that, guys. It's Lex Luthor, right? They're not going to kill off Lex Luthor on Smallville. What are you, an idiot? Anyway, you get it? Because they did kill him off? That was a...
Yeah.
Like a... I get all it. Right. Tough crowd. So our last cliffhanger is the fire in the Kent Field, which to me was the most bizarre of all. Like, why is there a fire in the Kent Field? Greg, explain that.
So it sets off Margot Kidder to come to town later.
Okay, well, that why, but I don't. Yeah, but for the same stupid reason, Clark burned Hope into the side of the barn in Rosetta. Like, there's no reason for these symbols to appear, you know, on their barn, like, spontaneously. How did that, anyway? There are plot holes. This is a good episode, but there are major plot holes.
This episode is awesome. I don't care about the plot holes.
All right. Well, anyway, we got all that. We see that Jonathan's still passed out on the floor of the cave, so he's in a coma or something.
Right.
And then we got our final last shot, which you like a lot, of Clark, right?
Yeah, because I love that, like, when they pull away, it looks like the S.
He's a little S inside the shield, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh, this is so good.
But where is
he? The only thing that could beat that would be, like, him, like, imprisoned in the Phantom Zone and flying towards the TV.
Mm-hmm, which they do in season 5, which is a great episode.
I know. Spoiler.
We already spoiled so much of this show already on this conversation. True. So yeah, and that's and then Lytle, you gotta love his, like, the music stops, and he says, thank you. Like, that was so good.
So, what I want to tell you about is, I happen to be on the East Coast visiting when this episode aired. And as soon as it was over, I had like 10 text messages lighting up my phone. Like, did they just kill Chloe? From people who actually thought Chloe was dead. Because nowadays, I think people would figure it out pretty easily that she wasn't. And I remember at Comic-Con that summer, right before season 4, they brought Allison to Comic-Con, but she kept up this facade that Chloe was dead. It's like, yeah, it was fun being on the show, but now I'm dead. But then I remember at one point in the press room, she's like, Jensen Ackles is so hot. And I'm like, how would you know? You haven't worked with him. And she's like, well, I'm friends with Kristen, and she told me. And I'm just like, Allison, you're a good actress, but you're a horrible liar. But then, of course, two things that kind of ruined it was, number one, they released the season 4 photo gallery, which included Chloe. And the other thing was they did like a weird like WB fall preview thing, which included a clip from the 3rd episode of season 4. So, and that was with Lana and Chloe. So
they put so much effort out there to keep it a secret, and they still left it up. That's a shame. So
yeah, it's kind of like, I remember Miles at a round table right before season 7, he mentioned Lana, who was supposed to be dead. And I was nice. I didn't report on what he said, but somebody else did.
Well, see, now at that point, you're that deep in the show. Like, there's no way they're going to kill Lana the same. That was a very similar situation, honestly, to this. And yeah. There's no way in 100,000 years they were going to kill Lana that way on that show. But here, at the end of season 3, I would have believed that Chloe would have died in this way, because we didn't know Chloe wasn't in the comics. You know, she was a blank slate for the future. They had been hinting that she'd have a bad end, and this would have been it, you know? So I would have, you know, if they did leave her dead, I'd be like, well, I mean, that, yeah. I mean,
especially when they brought Lois Lane on the very next episode.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then some people back in the, all the people with the clothes through, right? Like, oh, that's right. She's going to go into witness protection, and she's going to come back. She's going to be Lois Lane. You know, like, there were people, like, at school that I was talking to about this. Like, I had told them about this theory before, and they thought it was BS, right? But then after this episode, they're like, oh, man, you're totally right. She's going to come back. She's going to be Lois Lane. I was like, I told you.
But, of course, I remember that summer, though. It was right before the press tour. It came out that, you know, there's a new character, Jason Teague, coming in. And then it was, like, Lois Lane. And it's going to be this actress, Erica Durance. And that was, like, the news of the summer. I remember right before season 4, you had the posters of Clark flying.
Right.
And it's like, it was only a matter of time before Lois.
Yeah, and it's them in, like, the cornfield or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it was a great photo shoot. Yeah, it's like, it became a totally new series, which you didn't like as much, but...
Everything you said has come true.
I take no pleasure in your anguish, Kal-El. I know that you have great feelings for these people. And they will miss you when you're gone.
Ever since the meteor show, I've brought them nothing but pain.
Come with me, Kal-El. And she will ease your suffering.
She?
Your birth mother.
Lara?
She's missed you so much.
How could she? She died.
Her love lives on and will embrace you all the days of your life.
I'm ready.
Covenant got a 9.2 out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gave it a 4.5 out of 5. So, Craig, I ask you, out of the letter grade scale, what would you give Covenant?
Watching Covenant again today, it was like a reminder of what I love about Smallville. I felt like none of the characters, the main cast, were like weak links this time. You know, sometimes it's like, why is this character even in this episode? I wasn't feeling it in a negative way there. I liked all the payoff from earlier in the season. But, you know, I also just have to say, especially the first three seasons, I liked the episodic storytelling in that you didn't have to watch, like, every week to be able to follow it. Like, even this finale, all you had to do is, like, oh, Supergirl's in this finale, and you'll tune in, and boom. You don't need, like, five episodes of backstory.
So it sounds like you're going to give it an A+.
Oh, I'm giving it an A++. This is peak Smallville, so yay.
You know, as we've gone back and forth here, I've pointed out some plot holes, but they don't sink the episode for me. I think just the execution and the good writing and is very evident, and just the payoff. You know, it feels like a good payoff this whole season. Like, it's been working towards this. The Supergirl,
yeah.
To me, it does feel kind of random. They just drop Supergirl in here, or a version of her. But I'm gonna let that go, and I'm gonna give this one an A-. Still an A, but an A- for me. So A+ for you, A- for me.
The other thing I wanted to point out when watching this, compared to like the superhero shows that are on now, I feel like, once you got to the season 3 finale, you had already been on a long journey with Smallville. We've had 3 seasons of Supergirl. We've had 3 seasons of Legends of Tomorrow, which I love. But it doesn't feel like it's been that long of a journey. That makes any sense at all.
I mean, Arrow is the one show that does feel like a journey to me.
That's because season 3 and 4 were a slog. But
well, the flashbacks help too, I think. But I see your point.
Yeah, it's just, I feel like, you know, like, there's been so much character development, maybe not with Clark necessarily, but like with, like, Lex and Lionel and Chloe and even Lana, that you really built to something. And, you know, obviously this episode had a lot of payoff. And, you know, I mean, the show hasn't gotten to the point yet where they're shuffling their feet. They're like, maybe we can milk 10 seasons out of this show.
Looking at the tally board here, quite a few tallies. We have a plus one for amnesia count because Lindsay became Kara. And that brings us to 20. We have a plus one for a blue shirt, red jacket because Clark wore his pseudo Superman costume. That brings us to 15. We have a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections. That brings us to 17 because she called her guy to find out about Lindsay's fingerprints.
Did Lana kill anybody this week?
Lana did not kill anyone. Sorry, Matt Trips.
Her hairdresser.
Very good, very good. We have a plus one for episode title set in episode because Kara says Covenant, so we have 23.
Nice.
We have a plus one for Under the Influence because Kara was under Jor-El's influence, so that makes us, that's 23 as well. And then I have a last one. I want to help you. You can help me decide on this, Craig. Was Lindsay a Smallville High School student, and if so, should we count her death as such in this episode?
I don't know for sure, but I feel like it was in the Smallville visual guide that I wrote.
Okay.
I'm going to say yes, she was.
Because
right. If you grew up in Smallville, you went to Smallville High.
I have that on my shelf, but I'm not going to get up. I'm going to go with...
Me neither.
Go with your recommendation. So yeah, I'm going to add a plus one for a Smallville High School student death, which brings us up to 12. Because as Jor-El said, she served her purpose. So.
Okay, maybe Kara Lindsay Harrison is like a zombie version of Lindsay. That was just kept...
Well, either way, she's dead. So
for now.
There you go. She's not coming back. All right.
Just wait till season 11 airs on DC Universe next year.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So we have a Bechdel test fail this episode, don't we, Craig?
Because, yeah, they're talking about guys.
Yeah. Or don't even have any. I don't think two women have any scenes together.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think we have any scenes with two women.
We do not.
Well, except for Martha and...
But that's a group scene. So.
Yeah, and same with Kara and Lana.
That's right. That's right. Well, there you have it. That was Covenant, huh?
I want to just talk about, before we're done, the notion that the Arrowverse crossover is going to the Kent Farm this year, which is amazing. Like, and I was thinking about that when I was watching, too. I'm like, there are the steps that Grant Gustin was walking down in Melissa Benoist's Instagram. I love that. So the episodes air December 9th to 11th, which is probably a few weeks after this episode will run of the podcast. I don't think we're going to see any Smallville actors this time, but maybe in the future. But still, it's going to be awesome to see the Kent Farm again. I never expected to see the Kent Farm again on TV.
Look, I'll be honest with you. Kent Farm, that's cool, whatever. John Wesley's ship. In the 1990s Flash costume as Barry Allen, I assume he's that Flash and he's not like Jay Garrick in a new costume. I'll be kind of pissed if that's the case, honestly. So that's what I'm most excited about.
It sounds like the Batwoman stuff, they're filming in Chicago where they did the Christopher Nolan Batman movies.
Oh, so you're saying they're trying to tie those in that way.
So I think that like Mark Guggenheim had a tweet of like the Wayne Corp building or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's the same building they used in The Dark Knight and Batman.
Interesting. Very interesting.
We're getting these visual cues, which is pretty amazing. And I hope they linger in Smallville. I mean, I will die if they end up going in the house. It looks like the house. Like, if they have the green fly swatter, I'll be dead, so I won't be able to do this podcast over again.
And they have the picture of Lara on the shelf. It's like, hey, that looks like my adopted mom.
I just love the fact that the house got flattened by a meteor, and yet it was perfectly rebuilt.
We talked about that. I guess it was Legacy. Like, yeah. Did they find the picture of Lara? They crashed the house. That's so funny. Oh,
anyway,
boy. That's good.
So
stuff,
yeah, we have a lot to look forward to as Smallville fans.
We do,
and I'm sure there's like a half dozen conventions Tom Welling's doing in the next month.
All right. Well, speaking of the CW Elseworlds, Craig and I will be back with a special episode to talk about that.
We will.
We will. That's breaking news to you.
Cool.
But we'll be back to talk about that in a very special episode.
Unless they're barely at the Kent Farm, in which case I'm just
quitting. Well, screw it. But anyway, look forward to that, listeners. So, Craig, before you sign off, man, where can people find you out there on the internet?
Do I have to just tell people Krypton sites still exist?
You can. You may.
I need to make t-shirts that say that.
You should.
Yeah, so Krypton site, K-Site TV, Green Arrow TV, places like that, you can find me and come say hi.
And check it out, because he's doing some great coverage of all these CW and non-CW superhero shows, or just genre shows that we all know and love.
There are too many superhero shows right now. I mean, I think it's also part of what made Smallville so special is it was the only one of its kind.
Definitely.
For so long. And so it could focus on itself. And like I said, you're going into this episode, you're not thinking, oh, they're bringing Supergirl on so they can do a spinoff for her next year. Whereas you got like the CW crossover. It's like, oh, Batwoman's going to get her own show.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. By Smallville writer Caroline Dries. Anyway. Yeah. All right. So... You want to tell people where to find the podcast online?
That's right. You can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach.
Stop talking about your voting record.
you can find me on another podcast, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM podcast network. We talk about all things old and new, Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. And as for the podcast itself, you can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with an S. You can find us on Facebook at Always Holding On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again, with one S. Well, that's it, guys. We did it. It took us about 3 years. We got through 3 seasons.
This is an awesome finale. I mean, after you made me do Legacy, which was not that good, this was a nice respite.
We'll be back next week talking about something. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about in between seasons. We always do a couple of special episodes before that. But then we'll be back talking about Crusade. But until then, always hold on to Smallville.